federal election not 89, where are we now?
99.
Yeah, 99, and the federal election of around that time anyway. I know that I'm getting my years confused. Now, the state election might have been 98.
Yeah, the federal one was 99.
Federal one, 99, yeah. I know there was one, very, you know, we had the state one and then we had the federal one, and I was trying to run both and all the rest of it. Those financial troubles at the Secretariat in Canberra ultimately worked themselves out, and it turned out to be an extremely worthwhile redevelopment project, and it's all going well now, and they're all back on stream doing extremely well. But it was a difficult time. And, so I was there until 2000. And at that point, I really sort of felt that I'd sort of done enough at this level in politics. I felt it was time for a break, so I thought about it a bit, wondered what to do, and I thought, well, I'll leave here and just set myself up as a private consultant and do a bit of lobbying, which I then went on to do for a few years, and with reasonable success. I found the biggest thing with being a consultant, if you like, a lobbyist, political lobbyist, the biggest thing is to be really successful, you've got to spend more time trying to find clients than you actually do working for them. And that's where you got it. That's the grindstone there. But I did set myself up, and it went quite well for a while. Yeah.
What were the issues that you were lobbying on? Can you tell me that?
I did some freelance work for the National Party in elections, you know, helping out on campaigns and things like that. But I got a couple of commercial clients. One was trying to do it was an education project he had on the go, details of which I sort of forget now, but it never quite got off the ground, but he kept me going for a while. Couple of other things, nothing major. I mean, it wasn't like sort of working for the wheat board or major corporations. They were more fairly small sort of organisations. I did a bit more occasional bits of work for Australian Business Limited too, in a private capacity for them on their behalf quite a bit. Yes. And then, well, I was still doing that, and I still am, but 1993... 2003. George Souris rang up and said, look, would you like to write a book on the history of the party in New South Wales? Because the New South Wales Parliament had set aside $1 million to have written and published a series of books to mark the sesquicentenary of responsible government in New South Wales, which was coming up in 2006. And George rang me and said, look, you know, do you want to do the book? And I said, no, you know, I'm a journalist, mate. I mean, a story to me is three pars and that's it. I'd never, ever conceived that I could write a book, never. And I hung up, and my wife said, what was that? And I said, oh, George Souris for some crazy idea about wanting me to write a book or something. And she just said, well, get back on the phone and say, yes, you'd love to do it. And of course, she who must be obeyed. So I did, and that sort of got me, that sort of activity has occupied me from that point up to this point, really, one way and the other. It was an exciting thing. It was a totally different course for me to take. It was challenging because, as I say, I never thought I could write a book. And I enjoyed the work. It's very slow work. It goes on and on and on. You delve into a hole here and you find it's like a rabbit warren. It's got some other pieces flying off here and there. It really keeps you going. But our dining room at home, it just piled up with boxes and boxes of papers and bits and pieces and everything else, and couldn't get to the fireplace, couldn't get to the dining room table, and that situation went on for years. It's only literally in the last 6 months that I cleared all that stuff out of there, and we can actually go and have a meal in the dining room again.
And that's in Sydney, isn't it?
That's in Sydney, yeah.
And you've written three important books, haven't you, on the national...
Well, that's kind of you, three books. Yeah, the first one was that state one on the history of the state party. There was a fair amount of federal history involved in that too, because they interweave. But because of doing that, obviously, I went up and interviewed Doug Anthony, among many other people. And in the course of doing that on one occasion, Doug said he thought he'd rather like to have a book done on his family's history in politics, because the Anthony family is still the only family that's had three successive generations in the House of Representatives, all for the same seat and all becoming ministers. His father was a minister, then there was Doug, and then there was his son Larry. So, and I thought, yeah, you know, that's quite an interesting story. So I did that one. And then as a result of that, dear old Doug again, very kindly, kind old Doug, said, well, look, you know, we've got the 90th anniversary of the Federal Party coming up in 2010. Why don't we get you to write a book on update the federal history of the party? So I did that. Yeah, and they were all worthwhile projects. I'm very pleased that I've done them. Not because it's me that's done them. I'm pleased they're there, because I've sort of discovered fairly quickly that there's an enormous amount of material, published material, and very good published material on the Labor Party. There's a considerable amount on the Liberal Party. And up to that point, there was not a hell of a lot on the National Party or the Country Party. And I thought that's a bit unfortunate, because small though it may be in numerical terms, in the parliamentary sense, it has for 90 years been an extremely important party to the economic and social development of the country. And I think it deserves, or I thought at the time, it deserved more recognition in a publicly documented sense than it had thus to that point received.
Did you, while writing the book, did you feel constrained in any way by politics and party considerations?
Not at all. In fact, quite the opposite. The party, at parliamentary, state and federal, parliamentary levels and organisational levels, were all well aware of what I was doing. They were more than happy about what I was doing. They were more than willing to help in any way. They gave me unfettered access to party records and all sorts of things, as did Doug with when I was doing his story. I mean, all his personal letters, you know, it's an interesting thought. I would never, ever have conceived of the idea, getting off that migrant boat in Pyrmont in Sydney in 1966 as a 10 quid pom, that at some stage further down the line, I would be reading very personal letters and writing a very personal account or a story of a man who was the Deputy Prime Minister of Australia. Mm. I thought it was an enormous leap. But no, I didn't feel constrained in any way at all. Quite the opposite. So everybody was really helpful. You know, I mean, I could bring up, you know, any of the current members, John Anderson, for instance, you know, Mark Vail, Tim Fisher, they all gave me time. They all sat down. I didn't feel inhibited about what I could ask them. They never turned around to me and said, oh, look, you know, maybe you shouldn't mention that. So I think, and I've made the point right from the word go on all of these exercises that what I wanted to do was to come up with a genuinely objective and credible manuscript. I didn't want something where you get a book critic turn around and say, well, this has just been written by some sycophant. I think the fact that I'd worked for so long in the party was an enormous help to me, because I understood the structures of the party, and also I had a fair bead on some of the more monumental landmark issues, if you like, that obviously would have to be addressed and written about, you know, like Ian Sinclair's demise as leader, for instance, and the Joe for Canberra campaign, Pauline Hanson, and many other things going further back. I mean, Nixon and the meat scandal, I mean, I knew all about that. And these were pretty core issues, so I think that background knowledge helped me enormously.
How was the book, the most recent one on for the 90th anniversary, how was that received? How was it reviewed?
Reviewed extremely positively, actually, and there was a review Quite recently, which is surprising because the book was published in June of last year, 2010, and there was a review in the Australian's weekend review section by Ross Fitzgerald, which was actually a half-page review. He referred to it at some stages as being as dry as a drought. Which, well, it's probably quite right. When you're doing a book like that, there are going to be issues which are sort of heavy, if you like, and yeah, dry as a drought. But he did end up by saying that it was a well-researched book, which was an important addition to the political history of the country and a thoroughly worthwhile read. So yeah, all of them were they were reviewed. Received quite positive reviews, so I'm quite happy with the way they went.
When Julian McGauran went over to the Liberals, in 2006, he said there was no longer any real distinction between the Liberals and the Nationals in policy and in philosophy. Would you like to comment on that?
Bullshit, in a word. Julian. It upset his brother, Peter, too. Peter told me subsequently, I think probably when I was writing this federal book, but Peter McGauran told me that he had tried to persuade Julian not to do this for quite a long time, but Julian was adamant. And Peter had said to him, mate, if you do this, you're going to be regarded as a rat. You're going to be ostracised in Parliament by your former colleagues, and it's going to be a very uncomfortable time for you. And I suspect it probably was. Julian didn't do it lightly, but I think he was totally wrong. I mean, there is a huge difference between the Liberal Party and the National Party in many ways. Some of it sort of broad philosophy. To say that there's no difference between the Liberal and the National Party in rural policy, I think he specified in Victoria, it's just an oversimplification. I mean, the National Party is made up almost exclusively of people who live out in the regional and country areas, whereas the Liberal Party is dominated by people who live in the cities. There is a different philosophy between country and city people in this country. I'm sure, absolutely convinced of that. And certainly the Liberal Party has tried to encroach on National Party territory, there's no doubt about that, and to some degree they've been successful. Look, for instance, at when Tim Fisher retired and his seat of Farrer went to the Liberal Party. Well, that was our fault, it should never have happened. I mean, the National Party should never lose seats like that. But conversely, the Liberal Party, quite frankly, shouldn't be getting into those sorts of electorates when they are demonstrably, in some areas, particularly in capital cities, failing to win seats that they ought to win in metropolitan areas. And that's where you get some tension between the Libs and the Nats. The Nats see the Liberals encroaching on those sorts of bigger regional areas and yet not putting in as much weight as they ought to in Western Sydney, for instance, or areas like that. There will always be a philosophical difference between the two parties, which is why I'm totally against amalgamation. I believe that there is still a very fundamental, a very useful role for an independent conservative party, i.e. the National Party, exclusively representing regional Australia, and being able to work in a coalition situation and therefore be part of a government with the Liberal Party. I think I'll be very interested to see how the amalgamation in Queensland pans out over the years, whether it holds up or not. There was an amalgamation of the two parties in Queensland between about 1929 and 1936, where they came together and formed the Country and Progressive National Party, the CPNP, and they were actually in government for a term for 3 years in the 30s. But the interesting thing is that it fell apart. The Country Party reformed itself in Queensland, and the reason was that the country type members felt that they were just being dictated to by Brisbane. and they didn't like that. They wanted a party that was far more representative of the country interests, of interests of people of country Queensland. So whether the LNP ends up going that way or not, I mean, time will tell. It's an interesting experiment, and it at the moment, you know, what is it, 3 years old? You'd still say it was basically in its infancy. No, Julian McGauran, well, I just think Julian made a mistake.
Yeah.
And he's now paid for it because he's lost his seat. Interestingly, as of July of this year, 2011, Julian's out of the Senate. And who comes in? Bridget, someone, delightful lady. But what is she? National Party Senator for Victoria. So Julian's action denied the Victorian National Party of a Senate seat for 2, 3, 4 years or whatever, however long it is, but it's now got that seat back.
Do you think the Nationals have a bright future?
Well, I think the future of the National Party is very much in its own hands. If the party wants to continue, is determined to continue in its own right, then yes, it can have a bright future. And as of the moment, I would say it does have a bright future. It's got its sort of identity back on track, if you like. It lost it in recent years. You had these dreadful convoluted sort of phrases about, oh, we're the party for regional and rural Australia. And then the coastal members would say, well, you can't say that because, you know, you're ignoring the coast. So, oh, well, we're the party for regional, coastal and rural Australia. We're the party, I mentioned before, we did have a slogan that said country first. That got up the noses of the coastal people because they said, no, we're not on the country. We're not in the country. And then we had people, also when we were saying country, you had people in places like Tamworth saying, well, wait a minute, we don't regard ourselves as country people, we're regional people. And they struggled with this for quite a few years. But now they've finally decided, everyone agrees that the simple way to say is the Nationals for regional Australia. And even the guys on the coast and the guys in the bush and out in remote areas have accepted the fact that, okay, yeah, simplicity is the better way to go. It's made an enormous difference. The last federal election, its performance was pretty good. The last election in New South Wales, its performance was startling. I think they got five new members into the assembly and two additional ones into the council. So New South Wales is looking extremely strong. And again, New South Wales is the key in a way to any future sort of amalgamation type move. For instance, had at that election the New South Wales Nationals not performed as well as they did, the pressure from the Queenslanders to amalgamate in New South Wales would have been enormous. It would have racked up enormously, and it might have been very hard to resist. The New South Wales Party's always really been a pretty solidly anti-amalgamation party, but in that sort of trough period where its numbers never went to critical levels in New South Wales, but in the federal house where the numbers were getting down. I mean, at the moment, we've got 11 members. Prior to the last election, I think we had 9. You know, that's getting down to critical levels. This is in the House of Reps. When you get that sort of scenario, that's when the amalgamation debate comes back up again and you get, you know, more people. John Anderson did a review into the federal party in which he basically said, look, you know, your options are stay as you are and you'll end up going out of business, become a regional party and concentrate purely in regional areas, in which case you'll never have the chance to grow. Try and take on the Liberals, which A, will be costly, and B, will be, you know, cause extremely bad relations between the parties, or you can amalgamate. And he leant very strongly towards the amalgamation line A because of the difficulty for a smaller party like the Nationals to gain much of the corporate dollar. The corporate supported the Labor Party, the Liberal Party, or the Labor Party and what they thought was the coalition, but the money went to the Liberal Party. The National Party has always been a very sad and bad third cousin when it comes to raising corporate dollars. But also, from John's point of view, the fact that you would have a stronger bloc if in an amalgamated federal organisation, a stronger bloc of rural and regional members who could have an impact in the party room, effectively working as a rural regional bloc of members within the party, the single amalgamated party, and the fact that that one day you could have a prime minister who came from regional Australia. And I remember saying to John, well, yeah, pigs might fly, because the city dominance of an amalgamated party, the city dominance is still very much there. Chances of getting a prime minister from regional Australia are pretty remote, and I think you're far better off having the position of deputy prime minister for an independent National Party. That's a very powerful position to have, which otherwise I don't think you'd even get that. In fact, you might be very lucky to have any so-called former National Party members in an amalgamated ministry at all. So, John and I agree to disagree on that.
A couple of final questions, Paul, that we like to put to most of the interviewees in this program. In what ways, if any, has politics in Australia changed over the years? Would you say that Australia has become more democratic or less?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Politics has changed quite dramatically, but only really because of the change in technology and in communications. And politics, when all said and done, the activity of politics takes part, if you like, in the parliamentary sense, in a parliament. It's the dissemination of the decisions that are made that sort of gets it out and about into the country. And the way that has changed has revolutionised politics. You've got people twittering, you've got people on the internet, you use internet and Twitter for election campaigning and all of this sort of stuff. It's gone is the day, or are the days, when a rural member of parliament would come down to Canberra, could go back to his electorate and give a little bit of a report to the local newspaper or perhaps the local radio station about what's happened in parliament in the last month or something, and it sort of just gets run in an unquestioned manner. And up until the time when that guy comes back to the electorate, nobody knows what's been happening in Canberra at all. I mean, those days are just absolute history now. I mean, everything is instant. So it's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week industry. That's what it is. But the second part of your question, has Australia become more or less democratic? I think first and foremost, I think the observation is that fortunately, it is still a robustly democratic country, and that is vital in my view. And when you look around the world, there aren't that many genuinely robust democracies left. So-called democracies, a lot of them are such. They're almost puppet democracies. They're a tea leaf away from actually being some sort of benign dictatorship, with a parliament as a bit of an excuse, if you like, to make it look as though it's democratic when really it isn't. But democracy in this country, I think, is very much alive and well. I think we're probably more democratic now than we were. And I don't know, from my perspective in some areas, whether that's good. I think we're more democratic in that we allow greater freedom to dissent, I think. Now, certainly, I mean, we had, you know, you had massive moratoriums against the Vietnam War and things like that. But it's a lot easier these days for people to get up on any little issue and whip up a bit of a demonstration down the main street, Macquarie Street in Sydney or something, you know, get out there and campaign for social issues in particular. I'm not saying they shouldn't happen at all, but I just think that in some respects maybe we allow people to exercise their democratic right to demonstrate possibly a little bit more freely than perhaps is necessary, let me put it that way, without being specific on things. But that I think is an example of where we have become more democratic. You know, in the 1960s, if you wanted to get out and demonstrate on something, unless it was huge numbers and a very genuine issue, a la Vietnam moratoriums or something, but if you wanted to get out there and just pull on some fairly mediocre disruption of traffic over something, well, the cops would come in and lay into you. I think possibly in some respects it's gone a little bit overboard the other way. But having said that, I mean, the absolute key to a successful democracy is the ability for a country to go to the polls on a Saturday and find that as a result of that, there is a change of government and everybody goes back to work on Monday, totally accepting that outcome. And I think for a society to be able to do that, not only does it display a maturity of the people per se, and a maturity of the country and of its institutions, but it displays a continuation, if you like, of the absolute bedrock upon which the society of the country is built.
Good, thank you for that. And I'd like to invite you now, if you want to, a closing word for the interview.
Closing words. I don't know, Barry. I simply close, I think, by saying that I have been an extremely fortunate person. I mean, predominantly by accident, as I said, I think right in one of our earlier interviews, I never really planned anything. Everything that's happened to me has happened by way of good fortune, taking advantage of opportunity, and a very large degree of luck. But I mean, certainly my decision to come out to Australia in the mid-60s was the best decision I've ever made in my life. I made a lot of bad decisions between then and now all the way down the track, and I'm sure we all have. But where I sit now in 2011, I'm an extremely happy person, and I'm an extremely satisfied Australian citizen.
Thank you very much, Paul.